It's Perek Chaf, which is in the red ones. It's page 50. Actually, the next page, 51, really. Chavav. And if you're reading the red one, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines from the top. I'm going to be starting with the words Ki Hishavus Kol Ha'olamus. Can I have it there? Or? Yeah, you got it? All right, so let's get a bit of just a summary from last week. So, just to refresh everyone, bring it back into what the journey is here. So, in the previous chapters, we talked about the hidden love that every yid has, which can be used for every mitzvah, the chokhmah of the nefesh, the deep emunah, the mesiras nefesh, and so on. The question we asked last week is, that's very good, but that's only with regard to avodah zarah. That's when it comes out amazingly. So he is going to, how does it work with other mitzvahs? So he said, so the basic answer which he's going to give over the next chapter, till chapter 25, is that all the mitzvahs really is avodah zarah. In other words, the mitzvahs, every mitzvah says is a belief in Hashem. Every leisa says a deviation from that, and subtly it's avodah zarah, and therefore that's how we use that thing. But we need to understand what that means, right? So as I said last week, Chaf and Chaf Aleph, the two next chapters, are dealing with this concept we call Achdus Hashem, the real deeper meaning of oneness of Hashem, which according to the Baal Shem Tov and Alter Rebbe, doesn't just mean Hashem is one, or Hashem is the source of every blessing, Hashem controls everything, it's that there is only one reality, right? That's the concept. There's only one really thing that really exists, and that's the world. And that's what people think that. But that's Hashem, right? Okay. We last week brought a few proofs for this. He started to explain that we say that Hashem is the same before and after creation, which means the world didn't affect any change. Like we say, Ani Hashem lo yishanisi, I'm God, I've not changed. We say every day in davening, after who you are just the same as you were before the world, after the world's created. You know, the world doesn't make any difference, which of course means that the world's really not a very significant reality, because any significant thing that we do would certainly affect us, right? So therefore, what is it? You know, so therefore, obviously, the effect is Hashem is not affected. And where we finished off last week is because the concept mishum de kula kamei kolo chashiv. What that means is that really, compared to Hashem, everything before God is like nothing. It's like nothing, considered like nothing, and therefore doesn't affect him at all. Now, we mentioned last week, of course, one shouldn't make the mistake, not that we're going to make the mistake, because that's not our default position, but one really internalizes this concept, one should never make the mistake that the world doesn't exist, and that it's a fabrication or a illusion of some sort, right? So explain two reasons why they're not possible, because number one, the Torah says that it exists. The Torah says, Bereishis Borei Elokim, Hashem created the world. And second of all, if the world didn't exist, then Torah mitzvahs wouldn't be significant. Torah is about taking something from the world and using it, right? So, and elevating it and so on. So therefore, it certainly wouldn't be true if the world didn't really exist, right? So...
It also doesn't result, though, that you say we cannot affect Hashem, but we still elicit a response from Hashem. He can become angry with what we do.
Correct.
And that's it's written in the Torah.
Correct. So what you need to understand also is like this, right? As we're going to explain this more and more as we go along, that the world really is a nothingness, right? I mean, in terms of significance, in terms of how it really exists. But what you also have to understand is that this is the world that Hashem wanted. Just because it doesn't affect him, it's not a real reality, it's not a real significant existence, doesn't mean that Hashem doesn't care about it. On the contrary, the whole Chassidus is based on concept of Dirbet Tachtonim. This is where he wanted to live. He wanted to live in an existence that's nothing, right? In other words, what I'm trying to say is this, that when we, every day in davening, we say this, right? We say, it's really connected to this also, we say that one of the ways we can bring it out as well, we say every day in davening, and it's a part of Tehillim, we say, Yihallelu Hashem Hashem, we praise the name of God, Ki Niskov Shmoi Levada, right? That his name is exalted, his name is higher than creation. Hoidoi al Eretz v'Shamoi. What does that mean? His ray is on the heaven and the earth. What does that mean? It means like this. Hashem transcends the world completely. Even his name transcends the world, right? So what's in the world? It's just a spark, like a ray of the sun. Just like the ray of the sun is nothing compared to the sun. So too, it's the ray of the world is hoydal eres hashamayim, right? But nevertheless, explain the pshat vayorim keren liyisrael. That says the next pasuk, Hashem lifted up the glory of the Jewish people. What does that mean? It means it's all nothing until you start to serve Hashem with it. Right? When you start to serve Hashem with it, it becomes very important. Because this is the vehicle, this is fulfilling the purpose of creation, this is connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the real reality. Yeah? A different way to bring it out in a different way is this. So all different way. I mean, the Chassidus is full of this. This is like one of the foundations of Chassidus, right? So a person has I'll give a more feminine mashal, but the Fabrein has always talked about tefillin, but same thing. Say a person has a hand, right? His hand exists. And now I'll use the hand to put on tefillin or to light Shabbos candles, right? That's a fundamental mistake. It's not pshat that I have a hand. The hand's an independent existence. And now I'm also going to use this hand for something good. No, it works the other way around. Of course I have a hand, but the entire existence of the hand is about putting on tefillin or lighting a Shabbos candle. That hand, the hand is nothing. It's not even existence. Understand? So like, on the contrary, this nothing of an existence is very important when it's used for its right purpose, right? What we mean is that this world as it exists as being a place which seems to conceal Hashem, being a place which appears to be finite, number one. Not only this world, even the high world, that appears to be finite and limited and so on and so forth, really doesn't affect Hashem at all, because compared to Hashem, it's just nothing. We'll see later. It becomes more and more, we'll see. So it's interesting you say that, because it's also part of the same thing. Evil doesn't have a permanent existence. Evil is a concealment of Hashem. It's concealment of good. Good is a true existence. Concealment, darkness isn't really. I mean, there's a whole philosophical thing about, is darkness a creation, or is darkness just absence of light? But in terms of this discussion, evil, darkness meaning in the negative sense, in other words, the concealment of Hashem. Evil comes from klippa. Klippa means something that conceals Hashem's existence. This world is full of klippa, because this world is a world that conceals Hashem's existence. You're not looking at the world, you can understand the truth if you learn Tanya, but if you don't learn, just look at the world, you don't see the truth. Right? That's not real. It's not a real thing, meaning it's a terrible thing. It can be a very damaging thing, but it's not real. If you do tshuva, you erase that, right? It's one of my favorite talks of the Rebbe is the following. I'll say it quickly because I want to get into the parashah over here. There's a famous thing where in the Haggadah Shel Pesach we say that Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah said, I'm like 70 years, and the whole thing, the halachic thing. I sort of get the phrase, he says, I'm like 70 years. What does it mean, like 70 years? So the Gemara says, because he was young, he was only 18, and they appointed him to the Sanhedrin. They wanted him to appoint to the Sanhedrin, to be the head of the Sanhedrin, and he didn't want. He's too young, and he went and consulted with his wife. His wife thought it was a good idea. And a miracle happened, and the next morning, he woke up with a white beard. Right? For him, it was a miracle. For other people, it's a disaster. But right? Anyway, but so the Rebbe asked a question. That's all very nice. But that doesn't explain anything. He was still 18. So why is he saying, you know, I'm like 70, and I haven't been able to achieve the following? Well, I'm not surprised, because you're not 70. So what was his question? What was his wonderment, right? Then he says like this, that the truth is he was 70. Spiritually, he was 70 already. Why? One of the reasons is, because in Kabbalah it says that Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah was the reincarnation, was the Gilgal of Shmuel Hanavi. Shmuel Hanavi, the great Shmuel Hanavi. Shmuel Hanavi died young. He died when he was 52. Therefore, when Rabbi Lazar ben Azariah was 18, he had the power, the spiritual power, both of Shmuel Hanavi and himself, which was a total of 70, right? Okay. In other words, the Rebbe says an amazing thing that you carry, a person has to understand, when you think you're too small for something or you don't want to do something, you have to understand you carry with the good, the spirituality from the previous generations, from who you were before. Most of us are Gilgulim, most of us are reincarnations, like all of us are reincarnations, it says in the come Mashiach, before Mashiach, all the neshamas are, we've all been here before, we're just fixing what we didn't do before, right? Or completing, or adding, whatever the case is. That's the word the Rebbe says. Then the Rebbe says, but one second, it's a big question. It's very nice to say that we carry the stuff over from the previous Gilgal. There might have been good news for Rabbi Lazman Azariah, who was the Gilgal of Shmuel Anavi. But I don't know if it's a good, I don't know who I'm a Gilgal of. Maybe it's not good news. Maybe I'm carrying bad stuff over. Maybe for him it was great, but for me maybe it's not such a good thing, right? He says the most amazing thing. He says like this. Good is eternal. Bad isn't eternal. Bad is the absence of doing something good now. It's concealment of Hashem. But that's it. When the neshama goes up, after being in this world, and he's cleansed from any bad they might have had, that's finished. It's gone. It doesn't exist. It's not a reality, really. Right? It's just a concealment of the truth. But if you remove it, it's removed. So therefore, he says, every single person in the previous Gilgal has some good. Might not be like Shmuel HaNavi, but it's still good. Everyone has done some good, right? So we only carry the good. Even if my previous Gilgal wasn't such a good person, I don't know who he was, but they did some good. That good I carry over. Even if they did bad, that doesn't carry over, because bad is not an eternal thing. It's not a real existence. So the bad looks terrible, but the Mashiach comes, suddenly it'll just disappear, and all the good will come out. Okay, so he says like this. He says that really, this is a bit of a hard piece, let's try and see if we can get through it. He says that the world before Hashem is like nothing, insignificant. So to understand that better, we have to understand the following. And this is what he does for the rest of the parak. Let me give you a background. So later on in Tanya, the second section of Tanya, like I explained, that's where he really deals with this concept of Achdus Hashem. There he starts off with a different concept. The concept is that the bittul of the world, when we say the world is nothing, what do we mean? Because the world, this table, anyway, can't exist without the constant spark of Hashem, right? So every physical thing, everything that Hashem creates, he created with one of the 10 utterances. Just to explain to you how this works. It says Hashem created the world with 10 utterances. But then in Kabbalah it says that the 10 utterances were general things, like let there be minerals, let there be mountains, let there be land, let there be sea, let there be animals, let there be birds, right? But how about every specific thing? How does that work? So in Kabbalah it says that, Rizal says that everything, the 10 utterances, you take the words of the 10 utterances and through a whole system of gematria and interchangeable letters and so on and so forth, you'll land up with the specific things. So let's say the example is there. So let's say Evan, a stone, right? A stone wasn't created with one of 10 utterances. The stone is part of the land. Okay, so the land is created with one of 10 utterances, right? But the specific energy that needed to keep the stone alive, that's not one of the 10 utterances, but it is. Because somewhere in the 10 utterances, if you know what you're doing, which I don't certainly don't, but with some permutations and interchangeable letters and gematrias and things like that, you'll find the word Evan there. And that word Evan then is the vehicle for Hashem's energy to create that Evan, right? Okay. Yeah? So what's the point there that he makes? Like this. That Hashem Tov said, that the Pasuk in Tehillim says, L'oilam Hashem, Dvorcho Nitzav B'Hashemayim. David HaMelech says, Hashem, your words are always in the heaven. So what does that mean, your words are always in the heaven? So said the Baal Shem Tov, based on a Medrash of Tilim, he says that your words, when you first created the world, and you said the words, because we know 10 utterances, Dibur, speech, Hashem created the world with phrases, right? And you said, Yehi Rakia B'Soich HaShemayim, B'Soich HaAretz, there should be a heaven, there should be an expanse, right? Those words are constantly in the heaven to create it and recreate it and recreate it and recreate it every single second, right? And he explains over there in Tanya, that's true with all the 10 phrases, and it's true with all specific. That's why the name of a person is so important, right? A general name, a specific name, and so on. Because that's the letters, Hashem's Torah, with which he created, right? And therefore he says that since that's the truth, and he says, and he goes on to explain, the Hashem to explain, that if that phrase of let there be a heaven would depart, would be nistalek, would go away, would be removed from the heaven would just not exist, right? Not just it would be destroyed, He says there a very important thing in Tanya. He says later on, it would be as if it never existed. It would just not be there. Not like it would be there and then it was destroyed. Huh? Something that was once there and destroyed is still there. Meaning it was is a historic thing. It's a historic existence, right? If the world, if Hashem would take away from this table the Dvar Hashem, the word of Hashem that keeps it alive constantly, it would be like it was never there. Right? Which therefore means that gives us an insight into the nothingness of this world. Like I told you last week. Right? Even a simple mushroom, a stone that gets thrown up, and the stone is flying, right? So it's flying because of the force that I put into the stone, right? So if you'd ask the question, is it flying? You say yes. Is it a flying stone? The answer is no. Because stones don't fly. It's flying because it's been propped up by the force that I put into it, right? Same thing. Does this table exist? Yes. Is it an existence? No. Because it's only an expression of the phrase of Hashem that went into the table. Yeah? Okay. And therefore, really, it's not now. So why is it insignificant? Because really, what's the essence of this table? It's not a table, really. It's the Dvar Hashem. The essence of this table is the godly phrase, the godly spark, which is through the letters of the alphabet that are in the table. That's what the table really is, right? I forgot how the story goes. There's a story, I think, with the Alter Rebbe and the Mittler Rebbe or something. One of the Rebbe, two of the Rebbe's father and son, that they asked him after Rosh Hashanah davening, he said, the father asked the son something, with what did you daven today? Which means, with which idea and chassidus inspired you through your davening? What were you thinking about? Which madrega, which level, which concept, which idea and chassidus were you thinking about when you daven to inspire the davening, right? So he told him, he gave an answer, I don't know what it was, exactly, something. Then he asked his father, and what did you daven with? He said, I daven with the shtender. The shtender, you have a shtender, right? He said, I daven with the shtender. What did he mean? So it's explained. What he meant was that he was such a madrega that he was able to sense that the shtender is not a shtender. The shtender is the Dvar Hashem. It's the phrase of Hashem that's in the shtender. And that's what he's able to see and sense and feel. And he connected to it, and that's what he davened with, right? Okay. But what he does now in the next part of this perek is something different. In other words, the world is insignificant before Hashem because really it's just an expression of that Dvar Hashem. But what's that Dvar Hashem? He's going to talk about the Dvar Hashem itself. And what we'll discover is that Dvar Hashem, that utterance that Hashem said, is in itself a very diluted spark that compared to Hashem himself is completely nothing. The spark itself is like that. Is that? Why? And then the table was just really not even an independent table, the table that's just really the Dvar Hashem is for sure nothing. Right? So he says like this. Ki hishavus kol ha'olamos elyonim v'tachtonim, the creation of all the worlds, lower and higher. Me'ayin liyesh, from something, from nothing to something. V'chayusom, and their life. V'kiyumom, and the sustained life. Hamakaimlam, which keeps them going. Shlo yachsiru liyois ayin of efes, that should not return to nothingness. Kishahoyo, as it was before the 6 days of creation. The entire creation and sustenance of the world and its complete existence. Einu ela Dvar Hashem, is only the Dvar Hashem, right? The ruach piv isbarach, and it's only the speech of Hashem, so to speak, hamalubush b'hem, which is interacting and enclosed within the creation. Yeah? Okay. So he's going to explain what is this Dvar Hashem. So I want to explain to you something that's so fundamental. And that is this. On the one hand, when we look at the world, right? Hashem created the world, there were 7 spheres, Chesed, Bura, Tiferes, 7 days of the week. There's an amazing world out there. You go sometimes camping, you see the nature, the majestic mountains, etc. Right? And the truth is, it's a way to understand Hashem's greatness. As David HaMelech said in Tehillim, he said, Morabu Masecha Hashem. How wondrous, how beautiful are your creations, right? And it is, it's amazing. Human being, a doctor once told me that he had a thick book complete book to explain just the thumb, how the function of the thumb. Amazing, right? Every cell, every molecule, I mean, it's the human machine is some sugar, it's like a. Yeah. It's all created by Hashem. However, and that's the greatness of Hashem. You know, every day in davening, there's a phrase we say when we stand up, you know, before we say the song of the day. Not the song of the day, I mean Yom Yom, I mean like the Shira that the Yidden sang by Yamsuf, right? Vayevorech David. You know, I'm talking about the section of davening of Vayevorech David. There we say, L'cha Hashem ha'gedulo v'ha'gevuro v'ha'tiferes v'ha'netzach, yeah? Essentially, that phrase we say are the seven spheres. You know that, right? Yeah. Gedulo is chesed, because sometimes chesed is called chesed. L'cha Hashem ha'gedulo v'ha'gevuro v'ha'tiferes v'ha'netzach v'ha'hoid. Right? Then we say, Ki choyl b'ha'shamayim v'oretz. Kabbalah explains, choyl is yisoid. And then we say, L'cha Hashem ha'mamlocha. The kingdom belongs to you, and that's Malchus. Yeah. So chesed, which is the revelation of Hashem, which is the giving of Hashem, which is really the creation of Hashem. Hashem communicated with us and created us and so on and so forth, right? That's gedulah, that's greatness. Yeah. However, Chazal also tell us, there's a phrase like this, it's in Gemara Megillah. I'll read it to you. It says, Kol mokim she'ato moitzei gedulosei shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every time you find the greatness of Hashem, Shom atom moitze anvusanusai. That's where you find his humility. Yeah? In other words, because although we talk about the world as being gedula, it's being great, it's greatness. It's Hashem's greatness. And for us, it's a way sometimes to have insight to Hashem's greatness. Meaning to have a consciousness and an insight to Hashem, that Hashem created the world. Look the wondrous creation he made, right? But one thing that's spoken about in Chassidus, which is very fundamental, and the Magid, as Richard Magid talks about it and so on, is that as great as the world is, it doesn't add to Hashem anything. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. In other words, putting it a different way, the definition of Hashem is not a creator. That's not the definition of Hashem. Right? I'll give you an example. Let's say you have an amazing genius. By the way, all these mesholim, all these analogies we give, that's just within the world. So you can imagine we translate it back into Hashem, it's infinitely greater, right? So all the a person, unbelievable genius, right? And everyone knows him, he's an Einstein, right? I don't know if Einstein had children or grandchildren, but let's say he did. So let's say one day he takes his grandchild and he's playing around with him, he's helping with his homework, right? And Einstein helps his grandson do an art project, and he draws a beautiful picture, right? And someone says, "Wow, Einstein is talented. He can draw." So what are you going to say? That why was Einstein an artist? That's what he could do. That he could draw a nice picture, right? That's a ridiculous thing to say, right? Because he was in this world. I'm not an artist here. Let's say he could draw a little cartoon. I don't know, a little thing for his grandchild, right? So what are you going to say? You know what Einstein's greatness was? That he could draw a little picture for his two-year-old grandson. It's ridiculous, right? That's the same thing with Hashem's creation of the world. That's Hashem that he creates the world. What is Hashem? I don't know, but that's not his greatness. His greatness is that he's completely undefined, that he transcends every form of definition and description and praise that we know. And he's an infinite, truly infinite, whatever he is, I don't know, undefined, right? There's an expression in Chassidus, Lo yizeu elokus sheboir olamos. That's not elokus, that's not godliness in great rules. That's not the description of godliness, right? Yeah, Hashem relates to the world. That's what David HaMelech says, Murabu Masech, we said every day in davening. All your creations are so amazing, right? But actually, we say right afterwards, Kulam b'chachma siso. He made them all with chachma, and chachma is already a big descent for Hashem. When he put himself into some form of description, that's already humility. So that's what the Chazal say, that whenever you find the greatness of Hashem, that's where you find his humility. Hashem chose. Okay, he chose because that's ultimately the purpose of creation. But he chose to lower himself, to descend from his infinite being, infinite existence, to create a finite world. Right? So that's the thing. Now, So let's understand how this works. How did Hashem create the world? Just to give us a sense of how far removed the significance of the world is from Hashem's true essence. So it says He created the world through dibur, through speech, right? Now let me just first of all, b'chlal, we need to understand, right? What is speech? Speech is a tzimtzum, right? You know that, right? Speech and thought. When you have a thought that's like impossible to communicate to someone else, just so intense, and you just feel something, and I want to put it into words, you need to break it down into sentences, into words, into letters. And then when you put it into speech, it's gonna camouflage, it's gonna dilute a little bit the intensity of the way it was in its original thought form, right? Okay. So now, that's generally speaking, but let's talk about, okay, let's see what he says here. Ulamashal, he says, for example, K'moy b'nefesh ha'adam, k'shemedaber dovar echad. When you say one word, right? You say hello to someone, right? I'm not talking about the kindness that comes with the love. I'm just talking about the word itself, right? We say hello. Shedibur zeh levadai, this speech, this phrase you just said, this sentence you just said, kolom mamash, it's actually nothing compared afilu legabe klolus nefesh hamedaberes. Right? It's nothing compared to your speaking potential. What do you mean? She b'chinas levushaim tsoi, I'll explain this in a minute. Communication, words, is the middle garment, shalom. She koyach ha-dibur shalom, which is the power of speech. She yochel ledaber diburim le'en keitz v'tachlis. You can speak infinite amount of words. Okay, let me explain this to you. How many words can a person speak in their life?
In their life,
how many words? There's no number. Why is there no number? Because the taka isn't a number. In other words, like this. It's not like you have a quota, right? Of a trillion words, right? Or a trillion words. That would mean that every time you spoke, you're deducting from the account, right? But it's not like that. The power of speech is infinite, right? Anything finite compared to infinite is really like nothing. So I'll give you an example. This is what Sporni Chassidus just explains clearly what he's trying to say. If you take, you know how we always say there's like a drop in the ocean. What do we mean by that? I mean like a drop compared to the ocean is like nothing, right? So if I say, you know, I'm going to tell you something, but really it's like a drop in the ocean. You know, there's so much more to say, right, on the subject, yeah? If you take a drop out of the ocean, does it affect the ocean? No. It's like nothing. Why? Because there's, let's say, a billion, trillion drops in the ocean. So one drop really doesn't make a difference. But the truth is, not like that. The truth is that even though that's true, but actually when it comes to the ocean, if you have a certain measurement for a drop, whatever that is, I don't know, 20 milligrams, it's even less, one milligram, right? The truth is there is a finite amount of number of drops in the ocean, that is true. You might not be able to count them, but there is a finite number of drops, correct? Make sense? Yeah. I mean, it's a physical thing, isn't it? And when you go and take two drops out of the ocean, you actually have now taken away from the ocean. It's not felt, it's not significant, etc. Right? Now, let's compare that to one phrase I say compared to my potential to speak. Right? So it's more insignificant, much more infinitely insignificant, more insignificant than a drop versus the ocean. Because a drop versus the ocean tak is mamash insignificant. It doesn't make a difference to the ocean at all. But the truth is it does, subtly, because I've taken away from the ocean. It's a joke, right? So the one drop versus the ocean is still a joke, but at the end of the day, actually, it has taken something away from the ocean, right? However, one phrase of my speaking versus my entire potential to speak, the amount of words I could say, is actually even infinitely greater. Why? Because the power to speak is beligvul. It's infinite. I mean, the only thing that stops me speaking is when my life comes to an end, or you lose your power of speech, chas v'shalom. But as long as a person has a power to speak, it's infinite. There's no number. So when you say one phrase, hasn't taken anything away. So now, if one phrase compared to, if one drop compared to a full ocean is a joke, in other words, completely nothingness, the insignificance is unbelievable. You say a drop taken away from the go to the sea, the beach here, take one drop, say, oh, you know what, I've taken some away from the ocean, we'll laugh at you, right? You haven't affected the ocean. How much more so, infinitely more so, is one phrase compared to the power of speech. Now, so you can already see, Hashem created the world with 10 phrases, right? It's nothing compared to Hashem's speech, right? Okay, but let's still talk about human beings. So if I say 10 phrases, the 10 phrases are nothing. I go back to creation. Hashem created the world with 10 phrases. The entire world is nothing because they're really only an expression of those 10 phrases. But those 10 phrases itself are nothing. I mean, it's godliness, but it's compared to Hashem's infinite power, it's nothing. Yeah? Now, go back to human being. What is speech? So we know we have 10 powers of the soul, intellect and emotion and so on. And then we have 3 garments, which is how we express ourselves: thought, speech, and action. Speech is just a garment. Speech isn't even the soul. It's just a garment of the soul. It's a way to express the soul. Yeah? And yet one phrase compared to the general power of speech is like nothing. So he continues on, he says, V'kol shekein, how much more so, legabe lebchinas levush apnimi. Now, how much more so if you compare it not to the power of speech, you compare it to the innermost garment, which is thought. Where does speech come from? What's the source of speech? Thought. You only speak if you think, if you thought about something. If it comes to your brain first, comes to your thought process first, right? In fact, thought is the life force of speech. So that's for sure. So now take one phrase, compare not to my power of speech, but my power of thought, which is infinitely greater than my power of speech. Right?
But is that the dilution that you talk about of when you speak, you're diluting your thoughts? You're not actually conveying. Does that still happen with Hashem, with his thought and speech?
Yes, because that's what speech is. It happens by us because that's what happens by Hashem. No, not by choice by Hashem. But in other words, Hashem wanted a world that's much more, that's concealed, that's finite. That's what it means Hashem created the world of speech, because he wanted a complete Simpson process. Now, in Kabbalah it says, in Gemara even, that Shabbos, the world is elevated from the level of speech to the level of thought. That means it's a whole other shit. I'm not going into that, but that's what Hashem didn't create on Shabbos. That's why certain tzaddikim, they're able to sense much more godliness on Shabbos. Because the world is less concealed on Shabbos, because the level of thought. Because thought, it says, thought is an expression of the soul, but it's one with the soul. Right, the way to the Moshe Chassidus is that thought is a garment of the person, but it's like a turtle or tortoise, that it has a garment, but its garment really is part of who it is. So you can't stop thinking. That's why thought is much higher than speech, and less symptom of the person. Right? Okay. So one phrase is nothing compared to my power of speech. So you compare to my power of thought, it's much nothing. Much more so, right? That's all garments of the soul. Let's go right. He says like this. He says, yeah, one second. Sorry, one second. Yeah, nice like this. He says, Ain sorry, Loima, right? And for sure, legabei mehus ve'atzmus hanefesh. Now, compare now a phrase that you say, which is really only an external garment, you're expressing yourself, it's not yourself, compared to the infinite power to speak, compared to the infinite power of thinking. Now, compare this one phrase, not to speech, not to thought, but to you, meaning your personality. Right, the actual essence of the soul, which are the 10 powers, which are which they are the source of all the thoughts and the phrases that you say, that you think and you say. Now, it goes on a little bit of a tangent here. I'm going to explain it outside a bit because it's quite important, right? Because just understand how thought works. Because often people mix up thought and intellect, right? That's a very nuanced thing to understand, how thought is actually not. Thought is an expression of intellect, not the intellect itself. Thought is an expression of emotion, not the emotion itself, right? So the way it works, he says, for example, so I'll give you two examples, one that's written, one that I think is maybe easier to bring out. It's a person that says something to you, right? And makes you very angry, right? So how does that work? In other words, how do you process that anger? In thought, obviously, right? Think, what a kind of chutzpah was that? What kind of, right? Okay. Yeah? You ruminate in your mind, like, disgusting or so, insulting, why do you say that, etc., right? And you're really angry. So anger, of course, expresses itself in thought. If you're not careful and you put it into words, then it's sorrows, right? Then it becomes explosive, right? Okay. The truth doesn't start from thought. Think about, and it's hard to understand this, to separate it, but just think about this for a second. If you think about something, if, let's say someone says something to you and there's suddenly a knot in your stomach. If you think about it, you can actually break it down. Before you've even thought about it, there's a sensation. That's the emotion. Right? That's the emotion. To process it, then, you need to think. Right? Truth is, it's like, I think maybe also, maybe, it's like when you're hungry, you can say the same thing. Like, you're hungry, you're just hungry. You don't just think about being hungry, you're just hungry. And then you think about it. You notice, well, I'm hungry. Like, you know, I should go to the cupboard and take some cake or something, right? And the same thing with intellect. When you have an unbelievable idea, it starts in the power of intellect, in other words, and then it comes into thought. Like you're learning something and suddenly, oh yeah, and then you start to think about it. So it's actually separate. In other words, it's inseparable, but it's separable. In other words, it's like the tortoise. It's the turtle. The clothing, the garment is one with the turtle, but it's not one. It's two separate things. Right? Thought is a garment of the soul. Intellect and emotion is the soul. Right? And it happens differently. That's why it says, for example, when you have an emotion, emotions come from the heart. And they're expressed in the heart. But when actually how it works is they go, let's say you have a temptation of something. You see something, oh, I want it, right? Starts in the heart, then it goes up to the brain to think about it. But think about it not in an intellectual way. Think about it as a chokhmah, a machshavah, to use thought as a means to process that information. Right? So he says, because he says that intellect and emotion, even thought, even though when we talk about letters and words, right? We think about that more in the form of speech. But even machshava, even thought has letters and words. You think about them faster, you think about them subtly, more briefly, in shorter end, whatever the case is, but they still have thoughts, they still have voices, they still have letters and words, because that's how you process them. When you think about something, you're thinking in some form of language, maybe a zillion times faster than you speak it, but you're still processing it in some form of language, right? The raw emotion and the raw intellect doesn't have letters, doesn't have language. That's why it needs language, it needs garments. But they're much more you, they're much deeper. Yeah? So what's his point? His point is like this, therefore, right? His point is, therefore, if you take one phrase that I just said, compare it to my power of speech, it's already nothing. Compared to the infinite power and potential to speak, that one phrase is nothing, right? Compare it to my deeper garment, which is thought, it's mamash nothing. Compare it to my midas and seichel, it doesn't even start, right? So that's how it works. Now, the Alter Rebbe actually, at the end of the chapter, and this is what he does until the end of the chapter. But the only problem is, what he doesn't do is, and this is what the Mefarshim of Tanya do, he doesn't explain what's the nimshal, what's the That's the moshel. So what's the nimshel, right? Nimshel is very simple. The phrase of Hashem that created the world is like our phrase, right? Now, is it godliness? Of course it's godliness. Is it creating? Of course it's creating. It's an amazing thing, right? But the comparison to Hashem himself is so infinitely wider, so infinitely far, distant, that like the significance of that one phrase is nothing. It's part of him, it's coming from him, but it's nothing. Then, of course, the creation was created from that phrase, which in extent is only an expression of that phrase anyway. It has no independent... The world as we see it as a physical world is really bottle, it's really nothing. It doesn't have its own independent existence. It's only an expression of that phrase, and that phrase itself is kula kamei kala chashiv. So what's the worth, what's the value of this world? Nothing. Right? Now, again, obviously the world exists, right? But when we talk about something having significance, it's not a contradiction to existing. What I mean, like, I'll give you an example, right? Let's say a person is alone in the room, right? The person in the room is completely alone there, right? And suddenly a fly comes into the room, right? And then someone asks you outside, you know, this guy just went into the room, he's there alone, he's meditating, I don't know. Is he still alone? What are you going to say? No, he's not alone because the fly came into the room. It's nonsense, right? You won't say that. Because, okay, a fly came into the room, it doesn't mean anything. If I was alone in a room and I was trying to concentrate and someone else walked in, that's significance. Even if a younger person who walked in, even if a child walks in, yeah, because they're my league, so they can distract, right? Yeah, I understand, but wait, you know what I'm saying? But not like... So when we started at the beginning of the perek, we said that Hashem is Yochid, Hashem is singular in the world, not even Echad, Yochid, right? He is the same Hashem before the world, after the world, right? So just like, again, the Moshel is not exact, because at the end of the day, the fly does exist, and you exist, and in fact, you belong to the same overall category of existence, both part of the world. But it's a nice Moshel anyway, just to understand the concept, right? Nothing changes, or let's say an ant crawls into the room. Which I don't even know, right? You're going to tell me that I'm no longer alone in the room? That's ridiculous. Of course I'm not, because the ant means nothing to me now. Okay?
So why do we take ourselves even so seriously?
That is the million-dollar question. If you look, no, because you've hit upon, this is one of the big things of Hasidus, not to take ourselves seriously. The real message of Hasidus is the exact opposite of today's society's message. If you looked at real old Hasidim, and always turn to that, because these are the people that lived Tanya in much bigger ways than we can do, right? You'll see that the mark of a Hasid was, you don't take yourself seriously. You are serious, but you don't take yourself seriously. Very different. Because you are serious means there's only one thing you take seriously, which is Hashem and His Torah and His mitzvahs and the purpose and meaning of the world. But as soon as you let yourself get in the way, it's a big problem. You know the famous story, right? With there was a chassid of the Mizritch Magid, the Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov, right? And he was leaving a famous story. It's a song today, in fact, from Yontif Erlich, sung by Avram Fried. It's a Yiddish song. So there was a Talmud that was a Magid, and he learned there for a couple of years, and then he decided to go home, to go back home. So he told, came to say goodbye to the Zichel Magid. The Zichel Magid said, if you don't mind, if you on your travels, you're going to pass by Karlin. And Karlin lived a very, very big Rebbe called Aaron of Karlin. Aaron of Karlin, great. He was a contemporary of the Alter Rebbe. He was a very, very great person. Huge tzaddik. He said, you're going past Aaron of Karlin, just... Knock on his door and give him a gerus, give him regards to me. Okay, of course the chassid did that. Comes to Karlin in the middle of the night, and it's a dark, freezing night. He doesn't even know where Aaron Karlin lives. There's no to ask. The streets are empty. And he sees a house that it's light in the house, and someone seems to be learning there. That must be Rabbi Aaron HaKalei, which was true, it was. So he comes to Rabbi Aaron HaKalei's house and he knocks on the door. This is how the story goes. He knocks on the door and suddenly hears a voice, very thus, who's there? So his friend, who's coming now from the Maggid, says, Ich, me, I'm here. And he ignores him. And he's freezing outside, he's wondering how, what's, I mean, Aaron HaKalei is such a tzaddik, such a, yeah. And he knocks again. And again, he, after a while, he hears a voice, very thus, who's there? He says, Ich again, and he completely ignores him. Anyway, I don't know how many times it happened, but eventually, he knocks on the door, Aaron HaKalei says, very thus, who is it? And he says his name. So Aaron HaKalei gets up and he opens the door. He says, oh, Shalom Aleichem, how are you? Where are you going? He says, yeah, I've been learning about the Mizritch and Maggid for a few years. He was a younger Talmud. And now I'm going back. So he turns around to the Chassid and he says, I don't think you've learned anything by the Maggid. I think you need to go back. Why? Because when I asked, very thus, he said, who is it? He said, Ich. And we learned Ich. Ich by Chassid was like a swear word. Like we learned by the Maggid, there's no such thing as Ich. What do you mean, I? I is like treif, the concept of I. So I think there's only one I, and that's Anochi Hashem Alekech, I am Hashem your God, that's it. That's the only I. So you need to go back, and he went back, he didn't go on, he went back to learn by the Maggid. They realized why the Maggid had sent him there to give regards. So of course we have an animal soul, and animal soul is full of I and correct, that's 100%. But the whole Avoida, you're exactly right, the whole Avoida, the whole service of Hashem is to minimize the I, to take away the Ich, the I. Now, does that mean that we should be a shmata? No, that we shouldn't take care of ourselves? Of course it doesn't mean that. It means the focus is not on the I. The focus is on who we really are part of, that's Hashem. Because we are not really a reality, and therefore our own reality comes from Torah mitzvahs. And from Hashem, that's all it is. So therefore, what are we busy with ourselves? Ich, my feelings, this one's feelings, that one's feelings. And you hurt my feelings, and this emotion, and that emotion. Just get on with it. Just serve Hashem. Right?
Thank you.
And brings true happiness. Those people live like that are truly happy. The more people take, I mean, you know, we talk about it on Thursday morning a lot, but the more people take themselves seriously, the less happy they are.
But you can't just ignore everything.
Sorry?
You can't just ignore everything.
Example?
If you have a problem with somebody.
Right?
I don't know, you can't just like pretend it doesn't exist. I mean, in certain limited things you can, but
okay, so you're right, but good, because we're not on that Madrega, we're not from Aaron HaKalei. But the question is, how many things bother us?
Probably too many.
Much too many,
but
exactly.
Some of the things are, you do need to deal with.
So the word is like this, and So the way it works like this. Why do you have to deal with it? Because it says in the Torah, first of all, our starting point has to be, what does Hashem want from me? What does Hashem want from me? Is it important? Not what I feel. That's not a question. The question is, what does Hashem want? It's like this. Hashem says in the Torah, I'm going to take your example. It's a good question, right? Hashem says in the Torah, Le'sisna sachicha b'lovecha. Do not hate your brother in your heart. Right? Okay. So the Gemara says that you can't carry around hatred in your heart. So what are you going to do? You got to talk to the person and say, like, you know, let's talk this out. On the one hand. But there's two etzes. You can't carry hatred in your heart, right? So there's two solutions to it. One is that you get rid of it. But how about if you can't? Okay, we're human beings. We have a nefesh habamis. We have a little bit of yeshus. Well, a lot of yeshus, right? And we have to... you've got to get out of our heart. You can't. Okay, so if we don't have any choice, that's what we have to do. We have to sit down with the person respectfully and say, listen, I'm just having trouble with this. Help me out respectfully, and I don't want to be against you, and I don't want to make a break, so I'm a fight. So I just want you to know that it was very hard for me, and maybe we can talk about it, and okay, alleviate the burden. Good. That's because it bothers us. The more bottle a person is, the less it bothers, the less they bother. What bothers them is things that are against Hashem, against Torah mitzvahs. That bothers them. Right? And it's not that they not bother because they suppress it or they're in denial. That's taka, not a healthy thing. You're right. Because what? The world doesn't exist. The whole world is bottled, so what am I? What, I should make it to big tzimmis because someone didn't give me a maftir and shul or something? I don't know. I mean, like, you know what I'm saying? I know my father-in-law, he was a real Chassidic Jew. I mean, he knew the Chassidus and everything, but he wasn't a shmater. When he needed to be strong with his talmidim, he was very strong. And he needed to stand up for something. Other than that, he was really, even like confrontation, he didn't fight people, and he used to get so bothered if he read someone in a magazine, like if a Jewish man, a Frum magazine, if someone was interviewed, they would talk about themselves a lot. He says, "Was Redman wegen sich?" He says, "How can people talk about themselves?" He never spoke about himself, never. Because he grew up amongst Chassidim, we educated him, and he learned. Talk about yourself is like a treif thing, in a way. Unless there's a reason to do it. And I'll tell you like this, you know, I'll say a word from the Rebbe, a beautiful word, where Yaakov Avinu, in these parashas we're coming up to, we're going to learn about Yaakov, so we're learning about Abram now, and then Yitzchok, and then Yaakov, right? Yaakov, when he went to Lavan, he was all about sheep. His whole 20 years was about sheep, right? He worked for 7 years for sheep, another 7 years, and then 6 years, he exchanged this kind of sheep from Lavan, and the dotted ones, the spotted ones, the colored ones, all my smart sheep, right? Okay. And he ended up wealthy. From what? From sheep, right? All sheep. Then obviously he traded some of them in, like he bought servants and he bought bull and oxen. How do we know this? Because the next parasha, Vayishlach, he's on the way back to Esav, right? And he hears Esav is coming to meet him with 400 people, right? So you'll see why I'm telling this in a minute, right? So he decides, you know, he's got to. So anyway, he starts to send messengers to Esau. He starts to send presents, the whole thing. What's the first message he says? He says to Esau, "I'm Lavan Garti. I want you to know that I lived with Lavan." The Rashi says, "I lived with Lavan and I kept the 600 mitzvahs. I'm still the same Yaakov." And he says, "Vahili shoyer v'chamor, and I was able to amass a fortune of oxen and bulls and donkeys and all kinds of things, and then maidservants, servants." And he throws in the sheep there as well. That's funny, the emphasis, right? A whole 20 years working for sheep, and it's not even first on the list. So that explains a beautiful thing. A sheep follows a shepherd, right? The foundation of a yid is to be a sheep. Bittel. It's to be a bittel, right? We are completely surrendered to Hashem. We're completely bottled to Hashem. The ich doesn't exist. We are just whatever Hashem wants us to do. That's who we are. Not only that, even understanding and enjoying learning is all part of it because Hashem wants us to. Hashem wants us to be a person also, right? He wants us to have feelings, everything. So the foundation is, however, there's sometimes that you can't be a sheep, outwardly at least, right? When you're dealing with an Esav, you gotta be confident. What I'm trying to say is that bittul, being bottle and not taking yourself seriously, doesn't mean you're a shmata. Because when it comes to something important, you can stand up. So Yaakov, when he sends to Esau, he doesn't talk about sheep. He says, "Listen here, you're coming to fight me? Bulls, cows, I'm strong." Right? Because it comes to fighting Klippa, oh boy, I'm no shmata. Right? And by the way, it's a very difficult mission. It's a very difficult mission. Because if I could just be a sheep, if I could just be bottled, it's actually easier. Understand? Okay, so I'll get used to this thing, but I'm nothing and finished. Right? So I always think about this. It's a very, very big challenge sometimes. I think about the army of Shluchim that they ever built, for example, right? And you see, I was going to say the word conflicting. It's not conflicting. Because sichas like this explain it. But on the one hand, the Rebbe is full of memoriam and sichas about bittul, 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 and bittul. And he tells a guy, you know, this, he takes this young bacher, who's a girl, whatever, who's maybe took a grown up really, really with the concept of bittul, and he says, "Okay, now go and conquer the world." How are you going to conquer the world when you bottle? But that's part of the bittul. Part of the bittul is that you're expression of what Hashem wants. Hashem wants you to train in the sheep for a bit of who? That's who you are, but it's not about you. It needs to be strong, but not about you. Right? So this is the outcome of this world, of this thing, right? So we actually. So this is the first part. There's a Perek Chaf Aleph, which is the next part we'll talk about in a second. I mean, next week. But Kriyat Kafalah is that understanding that the first thing to understand about the oneness of Hashem is that the world is nothing. Right? Let me tell you about my father-in-law was once Simchas Torah with his family in Crown Heights. And he still lives in Morristown, but he was once in Crown Heights. But his yahrzeit's coming up in a few days. My parents-in-law had a very, very family, very good friend. My mother had a very, very good friend in Morristown who started keeping Shabbos, started became frum. But very simple, they didn't come from a background, and they were very simple. He was a very simple guy, and at that stage, I think he wasn't even properly frum, he wasn't putting on film or whatever. And they were very, very friendly, my parents-in-law. It was an interesting friendship, because my father was like, you know. And anyway, they came and they joined my parents-in-law for some chaster, and my father around the table took a lot of l'chaim. And as one does, some does some chaster, but when he would take l'chaim, only great stuff would come out, like amazing stuff. And he had one message for this guy. My father-in-law was in America for over 50 years, and he couldn't speak English properly. He was in yeshiva, he learned, I mean, he could speak English, but his grammar and his accent was all over the place. So he had one phrase I heard. I wasn't there, it was before I was married, even this. But the one phrase, he was trying to bring this guy closer, the Yiddish guy, and say, you got to start keeping mitzvahs. So how do you do it? He kept on telling him this world is nothing. And apparently the whole Simchas Torah at home, and he was praying with him, he had one phrase. He says, this world is nothing. That was the phrase. This world is nothing. And I think he convinced him after just to put on film or whatever, and then became from there. This world is nothing. What are you pursuing here? What are you running after? The ant in the room, that's what you're running after. It's nothing. Anyway, that's the part one. It gets better. See you next week. It's a shame.